I'm Stephen Sachs, owner of Solutions to Results, a firm that helps CPA practices and organizations in the area of communication, culture, education, and training. Today, I'm with Gary Copens. Gary is an internationally recognized speaker and author on enterprise and corporate performance management improvement methods and business analytics. He has been a consultant with Deloitte, KPMG, and SAS. He is also the founder of North Carolina Analytics-Based Performance Management. Gary is also the author of several books, including ones on performance management and business analytics. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you. It's my privilege.
Last time in our first webcast in this series, we explored the definition and practical application of enterprise and corporate performance management. Please explain how both of these methods relate to profitability and reporting analysis.
Well, enterprise and corporate performance management, EPM, CPM, that's their acronyms. They're actually synonymous. And what they are is really a integration of multiple methods of which product and service and customer profitability is one of them. The others, which we talked about in the previous installment, strategy, BAT balance scorecard for strategy management, lean management for productivity, enterprise risk management, the move from the annual budget to driver-based rolling financial forecast, all these like gears and machine, they fit together. So what we're going to talk about today is really one of those components.
Well, let's start with the EPM-CPM method that you mentioned. The problems with product and service line cost accounting, what are its deficiencies and how can they be resolved?
Well, the big problem is overhead allocations, the allocation of indirect expenses to products and service lines. I use products and service lines individually because many organizations, in fact, the vast majority of companies don't have physical products, they're services. The problem is, it's convenient for the accountants to allocate the overhead based on allocation factors like labor hours, number of units produced in a manufacturer, headcount, number of employees, square feet, all of these. None of them reflect the unique consumption relationship between how the outputs, products and services consume the end-to-end business processes and the activities in them. And then, of course, the expenses, salary, supplies, you know, and the like. So the problem is really it's convenient for the accountants to do that, what I call butter spreading, because it satisfies the external reporting, statutory reporting for regulators and the like, but it's flawed and misleading for the internal management accounting.
Well, you had mentioned in one of our prior conversations that you said accountants are still living in the 1960s where they're thinking about allocations. Is this what you're alluding to in what you just mentioned?
Yeah, because some of the solutions, the resolve it, of course, one of them is really the predominant one, activity-based costing, which we'll talk about later what the issues are with why people think it's too big and too complex, is that method was in the textbooks in the 1970s. And here we are 40, 50 years later, and the majority of companies and organizations we're using activity-based costing to do this, meaning decompose the indirect expense cost pools and trace them and assign them based on a causal-based driver, you know, which is code for a cost allocation factor. It's been around for 30, 40 years. So I say they're in the 1960s. And the sad part is the information that they're giving their managers, employee teams, executives is flawed and misleading because when you do it the more correct way, it's just full absorption costing done correctly. Without that, some of the products are overcosted, the others must be undercosted, zero-sum error game. Mm-hmm. Therefore, all of the margins and pricing, all of that's misleading.
Well, let's do a little deeper dive into this because accountants say that activity-based costing, or ABC as its acronym is known, is too complex to implement and it's too difficult to maintain as a costing system. And then you mentioned something about rapid prototyping as a solution for this. What is prototyping and what role does it play to overcome CPA's reluctance?
Well, the rapid prototyping, which I'll describe in just a few seconds, really resolves this other issue of the misconceptions that the accountants have. And NBC did get a bad reputation in the 70s and 80s because the models, and they are models, so it's not T accounts and journal entries, costing's modeling. You model the expenses consumed into the processes. They were way too large. They were way too complex. They had 3,000 activities. And then they thought, oh, every employee has to fill out a timesheet and a bunch of other misconceptions. And none of that is actually really necessary in order to properly get a reasonably good model. You know, we have a phrase, it's better to be approximately correct than precisely inaccurate. And so before they were trying to build so much precision, five digits to the right of the decimal point of a burden rate, when the error problem was really two digits on the left side. The way rapid prototyping works, and it's something I've actually been doing the last 20 years, and now I actually like training other consultants and CPA firms how to do this, is I have a workshop with five or six cross-functional employees in a room and basically build a quick model with maybe three activities per department. So if there's 10 departments, that's 30 activities. Since they're knowledgeable, have them estimate, hey, when this activity goes to these product families, still high level, what's the split? 30, 30, 40, 10, 10, 80. Hey, as long as it's 100%, everything normalizes to 100%. And then here's the key, the afternoon of the second day after this model has been constructed, bring in the line managers, bring in the executives, have these five or six people who were in the various departments show them it, and the light bulbs go on with everybody. It's like, oh, that's how you more properly, if you will, get that overhead fairly into the cost. Oh, that's how we could really validate whether our pricing and profit margins are good or bad. Oh, that's how we could do benchmarking with apples and apples, not apples and Oreos. So the rapid prototyping is really meant as really to get buy-in and displace misconceptions. Then the next step is to take three or four extra days, build the model a little deeper, start maybe replacing some of those percentage estimates with data that can be extracted from ERP or production systems. Boy, by the third iteration, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, it's a permanent repeatable production system. It's ready to go and be refreshed. And the really important thing is it's engaging when you're modeling your own company rather than, oh, let's just do a case study from an MBA school.
So from the perspective of a financial executive, could it be that there's greater focus on whether their revenue generating activities are inefficient or there is mismanagement of costs?
It's probably a combination of the two. I mean, pricing should always be market-based in my mind. And then that's a whole pricing negotiation. The mismanagement of cost, that may be a strong word. It's just that there's a lot of opportunity for cycle time reduction, waste removal. That's where one of the other components of EPM fits in, Six Sigma quality management, lean management, you know, the process people. But you can never really reduce cost to prosperity. Ultimately, it has to be strategic, rationalizing. Where do we make and lose money? Which products are the margins? Which customers are more attractive to retain, to grow, to win back, to acquire? Which types not? Those are strategic questions. That's really the power of management accounting.
Well, speaking about customer or client profitability, you mentioned there's an increasing interest in measuring them. What is the driver behind this greater interest? And can CPAs apply client profitability to their own clients within the realm of a CPA firm?
Customers are the source of value creation for shareholders and owners. We really need to connect them all the way. Problem is, when the accountants, even when they're doing activity-based costing, thank you, when those, the few who do, they're stopping at the gross profit margin line. But a lot of products and service lines are commodities, so they're comparable between your competitors. You've got to go below the gross profit margin line, including distribution channel expenses, marketing expenses, selling expenses, customer service expenses, to basically get a P&L almost by customer. And the reason this is relevant is many basically think, oh, well, our largest sales customer is also most profitable. Yeah, but when you get into it, you discover that, well, wait, I've got high maintenance customers and low maintenance customers, kind of called angels and devils. High maintenance customers, always changing schedule, never by standard, always special, always calling help desk, always returning goods. The low maintenance, the angels, we love them. Only by standard, never change schedule, never call help desk, never return goods. Those two types of customers bought same volume, same mix, same price, are not equally profitable. The high maintenance one is eroding a lot of your expenses. So the key here is not having, I call it the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, built halfway. You really, most of the real decision-making is in the bottom half of a P&L. So having a P&L by customer is really important. Okay, CPA firms, clients, customers, it's the same thing. There's going to be behavior, how you're interacting as a CPA firm with different clients. There's going to be, you know, I'm sure if you talk to a CPA firm and interviewed someone in the hallway and say, tell me which of your clients is really kind of a pain here, like, and why, you know, they start giving you the whole story. Well, that typically translates into spending a lot more time. So now we're spending a lot more time with them, which may not be billable or chargeable. So it's really rationalizing the level of profitability by client or by customer.
So you mentioned the adoption rate of progressive management accounting methods has been slow. What reasons explain this, and how can the adoption rate be accelerated?
Well, the adoption rate has to do with some of the barriers that prevent people from wanting to basically be progressive. And a big one is resistance to change. It's just human nature. Mm-hmm. You know, people love the status quo. I thought only babies like change, you know, with diapers. But there's some other more serious ones. Some of them have to do with technology, with IT, dirty data, low quality data. That can be cleaned up by the IT firm. But others are fear of knowing the truth or others knowing the truth. I had one client engagement several years ago. It was a bakery company. And there was a product manager for the Danish and, you know, with the jellies and so forth. It was under their traditional system, it was most profitable. When we did the ABC, found out that the breads went through easily, but the Danish is more planned cleaning and stuff like that that took extra work. And so that product manager saw that when this study is done or this system is done, he's not going to be number one anymore. He went to the CEO and said, what are we doing this stupid activity-based customer? We should be quality management. We got kicked out. We were back in a couple of weeks because the main question the CEO is asking, where do we make money and lose money? It's an example of fear of knowing the truth. That man worried much more about his personal situation than his organizational. Other barriers, fear of being measured, fear of being held accountable. You know, so none of this stuff has anything to do with systems or methods. It's all behavioral. It's change management. And to really be successful implementing these methods, you got to have a little bit of a psychology, sociology to you, but most managers don't have degrees in sociology.
So line managers don't push back to get better information for better decision making. So because you talk about reluctance, afraid to know the truth, or you know their decision making. So what can be done to change this dynamic?
Yeah, push back. The real issue is most of them don't trust the accounting data. They know it's flawed. In fact, some of them are really irritated, especially some of the product owners. Because they get slapped with this overhead thing based on labor hours or something like that. And they say, wait a second, it's that other department's causing all that. I'm not causing any of that work, but I'm basically being charged with it. It's like going to a restaurant with three other friends. You order a little salad. The other three order the most expensive item on the menu. And at the end, the waiter or waitress brings the bill. They say, hey, let's split this check evenly. How do you feel? Ah, this is unfair. That's how a lot of the line managers do feel. But they are a bit reluctant to basically try to get it changed, even though they may mention it, because they've got enough problems on their own. They've got a lot of other priorities, so it hasn't really risen to the top. And some of them don't recognize the magnitude of the error when you do it properly. It's not 3% or 5%, you know, like a $100 product is really $102 or $98. It could be $130 or $70. So there's not the recognition of the magnitude of the error if it was to be done properly.
So shifting gears for a second, let's talk a little bit about knowledge transfer and how these analytical tools will render the audit more of a commodity, given that artificial intelligence and robotic process automation and other areas of technology are becoming more mainstream. And what impact will this have on the CPAs providing advisory services?
Yeah, it have an impact not just on the CPAs, but actually the entire accounting profession. And I always say that the EPM, CPM, and I, you know, briefly said it's really the integration of multiple methods, what I call the gears of the machine, which the real vision is to seamlessly integrate all those gears. With most companies, some of the teeth are broken, some of the gears are separated. We really want them, you know, basically meshed together, more torque, more speed, more revolutions per minute, if you will, all producing better information. But when you embed analytics into them, you turbocharge them. You get even more good stuff, regression, correlation, clustering, association. I know most people listening to me, I took those courses in college. I just want to pass and grade and get out of there. Well, sorry, you know, it's here, data science. The good news is you don't need to go to your attic or basement and get the textbook out and brush it, but you do need the skill sets to do some of this. But now here is what's coming at most organizations and the accountants. It's artificial intelligence, robotic process automation, machine learning, cognitive software, they're all basically cousins. It's going to basically eliminate jobs. The computer is going to do what a manual was done manually. You know, at the low end, clerks, payable clerks, accounts receivable clerks, payroll clerks, you know, the computer's going to follow their, kind of doing their processing of the invoices. It's going to be memorizing it. After a while, it says, I don't need you, I can do it, you know. But the audit, we won't be having sampling anymore. It's going to be 100% because the computer's going to be able to go near real time or real time to all of the transactions, receivable, payments, whatever transactions that are hitting the general ledger, and when it starts seeing anomalies, potential fraud detection, or just strange items, it's going to be able to detect them. No different than what a manual auditor kind of going through it would have been doing on their own. So in both cases, the audit and even internal auditors for a company, their job is basically at risk, the clerks, the payable clerks, because a computer's going to basically replace it. And many think, oh, well, that's a decade away. This is science fiction. Yeah, this is not that far away. It's moving faster. You know, when technology, the duration time for technology gets faster and faster. In fact, remember televisions in the 1950s? How long did it take for 50% of households to have them? Then, you know, big computers, then, you know, cell phones. It gets shorter and shorter and shorter each time. It's going to happen with artificial intelligence and robotic process automation.
So for those who are going through school now, they're not just going to be focused on doing auditing or tax. They're going to have to understand data analytics and a whole bunch of other areas, including technology. So both in the CPA, the public sector, and the private sector, you're going to be hiring for different skill sets.
Yes, but that's also going to be good for the young people coming in because their jobs are going to be more meaningful and more fulfilling. They're going to be solving problems. They're going to be analyzing. They're going to be, you know, the classical term of the CFO, you know, being a trusted advisor to the line managers. It's going to facilitate the ability to do all that as opposed to, you know, number crunching and kind of boring tick and tie debits and credits. You know, they let the computer do, you know, the manual stuff, make your jobs far more interesting and value adding value to the organization because of the contribution that you will be making to the rest of the organization and the shareholders and owners. And this applies in public sector government as well, which is a whole other story. Most of these principles are universal. And so they can be applied for public sector government, just like a regular commercial company.
Absolutely. Last question I have for you is what resources can viewers of this webcast go to find out more about EPM and CPM?
Yeah, these topics, including one particular one, is called Measuring and Managing Customer Profitability. It's an article published by the Institute of Management Accountants, because I served a 3-year term for them after I retired from SAS. I'm partly retired. Which really also suggests go to the Institute of Management Accountants website, www.imanet.org. A lot of articles also there. And of course, the AICPA and CIMA and their CGMA have articles. I've actually authored a couple of books that are for the AICPA and the CGMA program. So those could be some resources. And of course, I've authored a lot of books, but I am not pushing my books. I tell people, don't buy the book. Go to Wiley.com. That's my main publisher, or Amazon. Chapter 1 is usually a free download. And so that's a quick way of just kind of getting an overview and didn't have to pay anything.
Well, terrific. Well, thank you, Gary, for providing a deeper dive into CPM and EPM as it relates to profitability reporting and analysis. I think the takeaway is it does not matter the type of business that you're working in, the type of industry, having a handle on costs and timely and relevant data and taking the appropriate actions are really the takeaways from this discussion and the webcast that we did prior to this.
Steve, can I just add one thing, though, just before closing? Because this is something that's of high interest to me. I think in the past, the best leaders and the best executives had the best answers. Today, I don't think that's the case. Today, I think the best leaders and best executives have the best questions. There is too much complexity. There's too much volatility. There's too much uncertainty for them to rely on their gut feel or sixth sense or the types of answers they made, good answers in the past that got them promoted to the top. They really need to create a culture of discovery and investigation. And this is where analytics come into place, because analytics creates questions. It creates better questions and even more questions. And they also need to have tolerance for making mistakes, as long as you learn from the mistakes. So that's sort of my message about leadership.
All right. Well, that's a great point to finish on.